This is Will's Band of the Week for June 4th, 2017. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will with Barrett live in studio.
Hello.
And Wilson, resident lifetime Beatles expert, live in studio.
Hello.
Hey, Wilson. Thanks for coming, and welcome back to the studio.
Well, sure. It's my great pleasure to be here again.
Good.
This is your
fourth time. I was here for Help,
yeah.
Rubber Soul, and my top 10. So this is my fourth.
Okay. So you're not nervous at all?
Not really.
No. Yeah. I mean, by the fourth time on the podcast, we were talking about this before we started recording, but basically he's expected to be completely professional.
Right.
It can't be any slip-ups. Right. No, you know, missed words, no stumbling over your words. He's expected to be like at the Chris level of like just like complete smooth talker, right? I mean, Barrett and I, it doesn't apply to us, but it applies to other people, right?
Right.
You can apply a double standard if
there
you want
to.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Or should we hold him to
Chris
the...
I didn't know that Chris was the standard bear. I never really...
Well, I think for smooth talker. I mean, he could talk for 5 minutes and maybe not screw up. There might be a couple of ahs, but yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's a standard bear.
Thank
me for that, Chris.
That
thank me for that.
Yeah, I'm going to register an objection to that.
I should hope that my manner of speech is as clear and fluid as that of Fraser Crane.
Right, Wilson's in the middle of a Cheers
major
marathon.
Cheers binge.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know what? I never watched Cheers, but I know, you know, I've seen things with like, Ted Danson was one of the big, it was Ted right. Danson and Kirstie Alley and John Goodman, right? Anybody else I should know who
no,
was on that?
No, not John Goodman.
John Goodman wasn't on Cheers?
No.
Oh, I thought he was. It just seems like he should have been.
Different fat guy.
Another guy just like John Goodman.
Yeah,
George
what's the
Wendt.
Fat guy's name? George Wendt.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So John Goodman wasn't on Cheers?
Huh? Nope.
Well, I can be excused for it because I never watched it.
Yeah.
But,
kind of funny that you thought that.
Yeah. We were watching a old series from a few years ago called Damages, and Ted Danson plays this great corporate bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just great, and he's funny, you know, funny and evil at the same time. You know, that's kind of a cool character to be able to play, right?
Yeah, I have not heard of that.
Yeah, it's, well, we can talk more off air. It doesn't deserve a lot of air time on Will's Band of the Week, I don't think.
Okay.
There's not really a music tie-in, you know, so just, yeah it's just out there. Glenn Close, I'll tell you that much. She's the actress who's the big star. She plays kind of a cold, calculating lawyer. The way lawyers are portrayed on TV all the time, right? They're always cold and calculating.
Right.
Are there any honest lawyers on TV? That's not really, right? It's rare.
Wait. Well, let's see. What about like Perry Mason?
He's probably honest. I don't know. That was too long ago. It's probably about the 50th anniversary of Perry Mason right around now, right?
Or longer, maybe.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some anniversaries this weekend. It's going to be fun. But before we get to that, in an effort to continue with the $0 worth, let's start with this.
And now it's time for the death of the week.
It's okay to play the jingle for Greg Allman, don't you think?
Yeah, he lived to be 69. That's pretty old.
And he was ill. Like he had been ill for a while.
Yeah, but, I didn't know that, but...
But it wasn't something that we have to say that it's so sad that we can't play the jingle.
No.
Right?
It's sad when anybody dies, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's not like sad, but it's not tragic.
Yeah, in the same way. So,
although he's the same age as David Bowie was when he died.
Yeah.
That's true. And Alan Rickman was 69 as well when he died.
Snape. Isn't that some guy from a nerd show that you watch?
Well, he plays Severus Snape in Harry Potter, but that's not, that's besides the point.
Well, he did. Okay.
Well, he died at 69 last year, as with David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but he was a nerd. I was right about that. Nerd show.
You can formulate your own opinions. I'm just stating the facts.
He wasn't like, just like Ted Danson isn't really an ex Red Sox pitcher. Alan Rickman maybe wasn't really a nerd, but he was on a nerd show, playing probably a nerd.
You don't have to break everything down into cheers for me. I can understand.
All right. So Greg Allman, of course, was with the Allman Brothers Band. And they were able to be called that because his brother was in the band. That was right. Dwayne Allman.
Right.
And he died like really young, in his 20s, I think.
Yeah, in a Dwayne bus crash, Allman. Right? Or was it a plane crash?
Not sure.
You know, I think there's a group of Southern rockers. One died in a bus crash, several members, and another was in a plane crash.
Leonard Skinner, which crash did they die in?
I think that was the, well, I don't know.
That must have been a plane, right? I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
How about those guys in Ozzy Osbourne's band? They died in some kind of crash, too.
Did they?
Yeah. The guy named Rusty Rhodes, right?
Dusty Rhodes?
No, this was Rusty Rhodes. Wait, is that his name? I think it's Rhodes. He's the guy that
Randy
did that.
Rhodes.
Yeah, it's Randy Rhodes. He did that riff, that kind of annoyingly popular riff of, you know, what's that one where it goes, I. You know, what is that?
Like,
Crazy okay. Train, right?
Okay.
It's really annoying. Like, they play it, like, at football games on third down. It's really terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Our music journalism is so good, isn't it?
It is.
I would like to mention that the Allman Brothers were from Jacksonville, Florida, and we know who else is from Jacksonville, Florida.
Right, that would be 38 Special.
Right, so another band that probably influenced 38 Special. So that's probably,
I would think so, almost certainly.
Probably their legacy should simply be that they helped pave the way for 38 Special.
Right.
Right?
We should play a song and then talk a little bit about what it is that they do.
I've got a couple queued up here. Let's start with this says 1969. Oh, it's a decade of hits, 1969 to 1979. I think this song came out in 1970 by the Allman Brothers. It's called Midnight Rider. So I was a little kid, and that was on Top 40 radio. I would listen to AM radio and hear that song. Isn't that just, that shows you how
old
different,
you are.
How old I am.
I mean, and how different things were.
Yeah, both. But I kind of have this, like, sentimental thought about that.
Yeah. You have a specific memory of hearing that and stuff?
Well, no. I mean, just kind of just generally, I was a little kid and I was on the radio, you know? So, that was one of the hits, Allman Brothers Band.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Did you have any memories of the Allman Brothers?
Well, I didn't know about them really until probably I was, you know, like in middle school or something. I don't remember them when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. They played them on the Rockin' Apple.
Right, sure. Which I didn't listen to that until I was in high school. But I'm sure they're still playing them on there.
Yeah, I bet. If you turned on the Rockin' Apple right now, it'd probably be an Allman Brothers song.
Probably, yeah.
It might be this one. Should we play the other one I've got here queued up?
Yes.
This is another big hit for them called Ramblin' Man. That one was on the Rockin' Apple, too.
Most certainly, yeah.
Yep.
So I know this is Wilson's first exposure.
Well, I'm absolutely certain I've heard it before, but I've never been able to identify it as anything other than just something I heard on 94.9.
Right.
WOLX, Madison.
They play the... Yeah, that's an oldies station, so... Huh. Right. And they're more top 40 and some harder rock, but...
Yeah, this would be almost toward, like a deep cut for them, you'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 94.9 doesn't often play seemingly early 70s or even 60s music. They often play... I think they have a thing called Super 70s Weekend.
Oh.
Where on the weekends, I think it's every weekend, they have... It's a 70s special where it's just 70s music.
So maybe they would play the Allman Brothers then.
Yeah.
So that Ramblin' Man is from 1973. So... isn't that line kind of funny? I was born in the back seat of a Greyhound bus. Well, like, all the seats are back seat except for, like, the front row, right?
That's a good point.
It doesn't really have a back seat.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird...
Or would that mean, like, the very back? Maybe that's
what like
means.
You went all the way in the back.
Yeah.
Because, like...
There might be a row all the way across.
Exactly.
I suppose if you're having a baby...
Yeah, you'd want that back row.
Lay down across the
whole
thing.
Go all the way in the back of the bus.
Okay, so that's how it happened.
Yeah.
Probably.
I'm not sure if that was Greg Allman on the lead vocal. Probably should know that, but
I think so, because Duane was the guitar player.
I think most of their songs he was the lead vocal,
right?
So yeah, Greg Allman, that's a classic Southern rock thing, right? It just started itself spontaneously.
It's kind of nice. It's like a little reprise.
And he decided he wanted to play
some. So while this is playing, what are the, so this is like Southern rock, right? And they're kind of the pioneers in Southern rock.
Mm-hmm.
What if somebody's like, what does Southern rock sound like? What are its identifying characteristics? I was kind of trying to think of that.
Well, you got those double leads where they have two guitars going, playing like in harmony with each other.
Right.
Yeah, but so does Thin Lizzy, and that's like Irish rock.
I mean, Thin Lizzy, I suppose I could classify some Thin Lizzy as sounding almost similar to this.
They were a British band, right?
They were Irish.
Yeah.
Irish?
They're from
Phil Lynott?
Phil Lynott, yeah.
Lynott? There's a big debate over how to pronounce his name.
Who is the... We should know this. Rock trivia. Who's the guitar player for Thin Lizzy?
There were two.
There's Gorman. What's his name?
I must admit, I'm not familiar...
Scott Gorman.
...with their names. I know
and
Phil...
And the other guy.
Phil Lynott. Or Lynott, or however you pronounce his name.
Yeah, should put up a poll.
I've never said his name with a complete confidence that I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, that's a name that I think I've always said to myself, Lynott, but it might be Lynott.
I've looked it up, and there's a fair amount of disagreement from people.
Mm.
People are like, no, I say Lynott. I say Lynott. If you ask like his family, well, they're saying it in a Northern Irish accent, so to try to mimic that.
Well, as Barrett knows, you can't trust those people. I mean, they say Bloyd instead of blood.
Oh, yes, that's a famous... yeah, Wilson, there's a... Well, I can talk about it after the air. It's an annoying singer.
All right.
She said Bloyd.
Yeah.
I still talk about her 5 years later.
Greg Allman.
Yeah. That's an assignment for everybody, though, to think of some of the identifying characteristics of Southern rock.
It's kind of this thing where you know it when you hear it. But
exactly.
It's not something you can always analyze really well.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, should we move on? Any live reports?
Well, we went and saw the West High Philharmonic.
Oh no!
Spring concert, and you guys did some popular songs.
It's the end of the year concert in my school. It used to be called the Pops Concert, and they changed it into this combined concert with the two orchestras and then three of the bands, like a with horns and things. Like
so, everybody all plays at once?
No, they have five acts. So okay. Rather than being there for 1 hour, you're there for 3 hours. So it's a little bit disappointing in that regard. But so we stuck with our tradition of playing what our orchestra teacher considers pop songs, which are not new pop songs, thankfully, sort of, I suppose. But rather than butchering a new pop song, we butcher an old pop song. So it's a little similar.
Well, the new ones are no fun to butcher, though. So what did you butcher?
Right. So, okay. So we had a Journey medley, which, first of all, Journey. Why would an orchestra play Journey? That's my first problem. Second of all, it's a medley. So medleys are almost always terrible. They almost always have really, really poor arrangements. And thirdly, this did have a very poor arrangement. We all probably could have played it in middle school. I played cello. We played almost the entire time we were playing half notes. So
it's kind of not challenging enough.
It was not challenging enough, and it wasn't technically impressive, and it was cringy, and it sounded bad.
They should have had you do, like, Stairway to Heaven or something.
Well,
like, there's a string arrangement for that from middle school.
That's the kicker, because we were playing Stairway to Heaven. Well, that's the other thing, because it wasn't Stairway to Heaven. It was a Led Zeppelin medley, which wasn't a good arrangement, but it was Stairway to Heaven. One of the last song in the medley was Stairway to Heaven. And we ditched that medley, which was actually all right. It wasn't the best, but it was better than Journey. We ditched that medley for Journey. And so it was really bad. They had like little bells during Journey songs, like, you know, those that stick with all the little bells on it. What's it called?
I don't know what it's called.
The little tinkly charm sound. I have no idea what it's called.
Where you like run a thing across.
You run a thing across the thing, and it's like, yeah. So there was one of those, and I was very outspoken in my class about how terrible that arrangement was.
Yeah, but it's not like the teacher's going to change the arrangement.
Right.
All that stuff is your insider.
It was my opinion there.
But as far as somebody out in the audience, we were all going crazy.
Everybody thought it sounded okay.
Sounded more than okay. It sounded great.
See, if you're playing something that's not challenging enough, then at least to the audience, it's like, well, you're probably playing it perfectly.
We played it correctly. This was the Journey medley was the only song in the show that we actually played everything correctly.
Yeah.
we also played Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, that's fun.
Which the arrangement for Bohemian Rhapsody was admittedly very good. The only problem was there was also an electric guitar part. So it's a string orchestra playing for most of the time. And then during the guitar solo, there's this guy in my class who plays guitar, and he's kind of cocky about it.
Yeah.
But he's a cool dude, whatever. But I think he's too confident in his surefire ability to play the Bohemian Rhapsody solo perfectly. So there was that. And then the additional problem of the guitar simply not fitting in smoothly with the rest of the orchestra.
That part's true. You got to be careful about mixing.
That
part.
Yeah, that's
and
tough.
Then the third problem was the guitar was, I would say, exponentially louder during the performance than it had ever been.
It didn't sound right at all.
It had ever been in practice. It was because...
Yeah. That's a classic guitar player. He just kept turning himself up, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did he have a Brian May, like a red Les Paul? Did they have some fog coming up like behind him?
No, it was... he was standing next to a music stand reading music, kind of... So
come on. If you're going to play the Brian May solo, you shouldn't have to read music. Come on.
Right. So there was that, and the cellos, this cello section is directly next to where the guitar was. So me and my stand partner, sort of jumped almost, and we missed a few notes.
You're getting like drowned out by the guitar.
When the guitar.
Well, he got an unfair thing because he's got an amp.
Right. Yeah, so. It was. Unbelievably loud. It was painful. I was hearing
ringing. At least
he
didn't like grab your bow away and start like bowing his guitar like what's his head? Who used to do that?
Okay. One other question. Did you ever play like in your whole middle school or high school strings? Did you ever play Eleanor Rigby?
We haven't.
Because that's kind of a great. There's a really good like one or two of my kids played that. In middle school, so they figured out a way to, like, obviously it's kind of simplified, but, you know, it's kind of like just the George Martin thing translated, and really, that's a really good song to play.
Yeah,
right.
School hard. Orchestra.
I mean, the thing about Eleanor Rigby is the original recording was done with four instruments. I believe it was a cello, a bass, and two violins, something along those lines. It was
that sounds about right.
It was just a quartet. And so in order to achieve that sound, it would have to be just a quartet. And we have upwards, I believe, of 50 members.
Yeah. Well, I just double everything. Just like we had 15 people play the bass part, 15 people play the...
Right. I mean, it would end up sounding out of time. I've suggested that before, and my teacher said, we've tried that, and it's kind of... Kind of hard to
rejected.
Achieve
They're
that.
Not listening to you. They need to listen to you more.
Yeah.
Right.
But overall, it was great.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Good. So that's your live report. We didn't give him the jingle. Sorry, Wilson. You didn't get the jingle.
Oh, that's perfectly all right.
Yeah. It's got to be rock and roll to get the jingle. Orchestra
probably
get the jingle.
We'd have to have a special orchestra jingle, and we don't have time to put that together.
Light live report or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're rambling on. We're rambling men.
Oh, good right? one. Yeah. Yeah. I see what you did there. Oh, by the way, two things. Allman Brothers, Dwayne Allman died in a motorcycle accident, so I was totally wrong.
Motorcycle's kind of rock and roll, at least.
Right. Brings Quadrophenia to mind.
Anything else, Barrett?
Well, the other thing is something weird about the Allman Brothers. They were playing a concert in Buffalo, and they were guaranteed $1,000, and the promoter was going to give them $500. So one of their touring members murdered the promoter. But... he got off because he was temporarily insane due to drug-induced psychosis.
Oh.
They were much more lenient about things like that back then. Can you imagine?
Wow.
I only did it because I was on drugs.
Yeah.
So I'm not to blame.
It doesn't count.
Yeah.
It doesn't count. So anyway,
I thought
let's
just like
move on.
Getting ripped off for $500 would be, that's enough to induce a crazed
maybe,
madman.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't rip off the Allman Brothers. That's the bottom line.
Nope.
All right. 50 years ago today, not today, but, you know, 50 years ago this spring, the Beatles released the famous Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album.
It was today, actually.
It was today.
It was actually today? Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, June 1st.
We're recording this on June 1st.
1967.
So, you know, they said it was 20 years ago today that Sgt. Pepper taught his band to play, right?
Right.
And here we are... 50 years. Holy crap, we're 70 years then since
it's been
the time.
70 years since Sgt. Pepper initially taught said band to play.
Wow.
That's a long time.
So are the guys in the Beatles, were they supposed to have been
if they were
like
the band
40-year-old guys?
They would have been three.
Who knows?
When Sgt. Pepper taught them to play.
Hey, I just thought of something. Have you guys been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
In Cleveland?
I haven't been
there. They actually had one of the Sgt. Pepper's suits. I think just one of them. You know, like the uniform that they wore on the album cover or something.
Right. That's right. Cool.
I think they just had one of them. It was kind of cool to see it. Right?
I bet.
It was really colorful.
Which one was it?
So, I can't remember. I'm going to say maybe John Lennon, but I'm not sure. You know how the album cover is like iconic, right? And you just think of, I just think of bright colors. And
right.
Wilson brought it to the studio.
He's got it here.
Right.
Look at that thing. Is it spelled with flowers? Yeah, Beatles is spelled
Beatles is
with,
written
with
flowers.
Like roses. And all the members of the Beatles have mustaches. I think that's notable. Right?
Right. They went through a definite mustache phase.
Yeah, this is the mustache phase. And pretty good music phase too, right?
Absolutely.
So this album is 50 years old. and they released a remix. George Martin's son, you know, they gave him the tapes, right? Who knows what kind of legal stuff is required to allow that, right? But George Martin's son just said, yeah, I think I'll mess with the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're called remixes, but they're kind of really subtle. I was listening to a Bob Boylan thing, and he was talking about how, here's this part where the drums weren't coming through, so he brought them through. So they did like an A-B, and then, you know, on the original track, it went do-do-do-do, and then on the remix track, it went do-do-do-do. You know, just like, it's just right. Like, I mean, it's so subtle that in a way that it makes it more acceptable to people because it's not really changing
right.
The character of the whole thing. But it's like just bringing out little things. And like he was talking about how the bass drum like got buried in some places, so they kind of made it a little punchier in some spots. And,
definitely.
But anyway, it was fun to listen to. And I think I mentioned to you that I listened to it, and I'm not sure that having not listened to the original in like years, I wouldn't be able to notice, but probably on an A-B comparison, you'd notice a little bit.
Right. And the vocals like are more, they're just more out in front of the
mix. Made them punch through a little bit.
Yeah.
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 So there's 13 songs on this album, and somehow we got to try to do it justice. So I think, Wilson, say something about this.
Well, I would say for the remix, I would say it is sort of the true definition of remix, because I believe the definition of remix has kind of been extended to a massive change in the complete nature of the song.
Right.
And I would say that's less of a remix and more of a revamp. And these tracks on this deluxe edition of Sgt. Pepper are definitely more true to the original definition of remix.
Right.
Which more implies literally the only thing being changed is the actual mixing.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to the order or sequence or content. It's just
right.
It's just the mixing of the volumes and maybe panning of the tracks.
Right.
And he used the mono mix as his guide. Like, which is...
Was the original album in mono?
Yeah. They probably did it both ways.
Which is kind of weird, right. Because like if they have separate tracks, I mean, why do it in mono? So now they took some of those mono... I mean, they just made it stereo, right?
Right. I mean, I would think that they... So they recorded it in mono, right?
And well, they recorded separate tracks, obviously, so they could... Now they can make it stereo by...
Right, but like... Well, I guess what I mean to say is they would have mastered it in mono.
Originally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Like... It's you wouldn't think it would sound that much different, but like
it's always safer to mix it in mono because then you're absolutely sure that it's only one sound and you can make sure that everything sounds right in mono. So even if you're mixing in stereo, you can put it into mono and check it.
Right.
And then if it sounds good in mono, then you know that you've got a good mix.
Kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's play something.
All right, who's got the first crack at this thing?
We ought to give it to Wilson.
Well, Sgt. Pepper is such a hard record to choose a song from. I would say... I said last time my secret favorite was Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah, we played that before, didn't we?
Right, I believe we did.
So we should play something different.
So, one of the ones with a... especially on the deluxe edition, with a very notable change, is Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, because on the original track, they had John Lennon's voice sped up slightly, and in the deluxe edition, they've slowed it down to the original pitch of his voice, so everything is just the slightest bit slower, and it's in, I believe it's a half a step lower key, or even less. It's very subtle.
Oh, interesting.
But the first time I heard the remix of this song, I noticed it right away. So,
okay. We'll give the listeners a test to see if they can tell. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Thank you. rocking horse, people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drip past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Bang in the back with your head in the clouds and you're gone.
And of course, as I'm listening to it again in great detail with headphones, I'm noticing more things. They definitely panned the introduction keyboard to the left and to the right. I'm not sure if you noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure on the original it's either in the center or it's on one side or the other, and it doesn't change. But it's definitely more dynamic in this version. And the bass drum was also definitely amplified, like you said before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing like that those drum fills where it does the boom, boom, is probably they accentuated that too.
Yeah. Like some of the stereo mixes are unlistenable with headphones, I think. It's so unbelievably unnatural.
Yeah, if you overdo it, it's bad.
Yeah, like you don't hear something only with your right or your left ear. That's just not how
I don't know. I would,
hearing works.
I would sort of beg to differ on that. I think... especially like with, for sure, with the Who Sellout has that quite frequently. Martin Denny has that quite frequently. Definitely the Beatles do, where it's widely panned to one side or the other, and it's, you know, it's the drums on one side and a guitar on the other side completely. And it's sort of, it gives it more, like it makes it feel like it's more around you. Herb Alpert does this a lot too. I gotta say, I'm sort of a fan of that. The thing that's really the kicker for me is if one of the things is significantly louder than the other one, like if there's loud drums on one side and then like a really quiet violin part on the other side, that can sound off balanced. But if you've got drums and equally loud violin on the other side or guitar or whatever, I think that sounds pleasing. Like it's a thing I believe, again, you can check with mixing in mono. Like if you were to take a Herb Alpert record or a Martin Denny record and put it into mono and listen to it, and if you could hear everything clearly in the original volume it's supposed to sound like, then I think it'll sound good in this polarized stereo.
Well, this is, I've had this debate with Grant. Grant takes Wilson's position. And I take Barrett's position, so maybe this is a generational thing. But I think it sounds unnatural
exactly.
to 100% pan to one side or the other if you're listening in headphones, because it's just not the way your ears ever hear. But if you put it 80-20 instead of 100, then in your brain can perceive like something's way over on the left or way over on the right. But if it's completely panned, to me it sounds kind of contrived.
Right. Yeah, and you bring up Martin Denny. I mean, that's like...
That was
space age bachelor pad music stuff where they're like playing around with
right and
the stereo panning because it's like
you because know. You would have in this in like 1962 you would have two speakers far apart and you could say, oh, the drummer's over on the left side of the room and the piano player's on the right side,
yeah,
and it sounds like they're here because they're both on the side. So it was more designed for that.
I think it's different with speakers.
It's different with speakers.
Exactly. That's and what. Right.
The Beach Boys a lot did this as well, with this massive. It's kind of a big 50s and 60s thing when stereo was first coming into existence. People were like, "Let's test the limits of stereo and have things be so obviously in stereo that people will understand this technology."
Yeah. That, to me, it sounds brutal.
All right.
We should stay on, get back on track here.
Pick a song or give a 15-minute... Think what Nicholas would say if we said, talk about this album. I mean, it would be like 20 minutes, right?
It would be.
Yeah.
Man, it's really tough. The thing about an album like this is you can't pick like a deep cut because there aren't any.
Yeah.
They're all
right, they're
unbelievably
all...
famous.
I think there's four that aren't as good as the other nine, but I'll mention that later.
Yeah. I guess I'll just go with All right, fine. I'll do She's Leaving Home.
That's a good one.
That's a good orchestral arrangement.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock, as the day begins, silently closing her bedroom door, leaving the note that she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching her handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key, stepping outside, she is free. She,
we gave her most of our lives,
is leaving,
sacrificed most of our lives.
Oh,
we gave her everything money could buy.
She's snores as his wife gets into her dressing gown, picks up the letter that's lying there, standing alone at the top of the stairs. She breaks down and cries to her husband, "Daddy, our baby's gone. Why would she treat us so thoughtlessly? How could she do this to me?" She,
we never thought of ourselves, is leaving.
Yeah, that's great. It's better than average, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just unusual, too, during that, you know, well, this is the early psychedelic era, but like, a song from the perspective of the parents whose daughter's leaving is kind of
right
out of step from a lot of the other things that were going on.
It's very, it shows a very great and deep understanding and...
like empathy?
There's a word that starts with C. a deep understanding of the full concept of life. And the really understanding the entirety of human life and existence, which I believe is also demonstrated on When I'm 64. Because can you imagine another rock band imagining what it would be like when they're old in like 40 years, looking that far into the future and sort of understanding and like realizing this thing and making a song about it. It's sort of crazy.
Right. Only two of them made it to 64, and now Ringo's like 10 years older than that.
That's right.
Yeah, so you should have a new update, When I'm 74.
When I was 64.
Yeah. Yeah. So
did you still need...
You know, when people go back and we've had this debate about like the Pitchfork 10-point scale, but they love to go back and just give things a 10 when they say, well, obviously this is a great album, so 10, right? So if they're, I don't know if Pitchfork ever did it, but if they did it with this album, obviously they would just say 10, right? But I have a slight gripe because Metacritic, you know how they do a Metascore, right? So they take they convert the scores that people give albums to like a 10-point scale, and then they average them out and make it a 100-point scale.
Right.
So it's a lot of the album that's universally good, gets good reviews, will get like an 81 or an 82 or whatever, right? So for this Sgt. Pepper's thing, they got like 9 reviews, and like 7 of them are 10s, 2 of them are 8s, right?
I saw that.
So their composite score should be like 95 or 96. But they just gave it 100. Just like 100. It's right. Like, well, wait a minute. Don't just throw out your whole scale because you think you have to give this 100.
Right.
Right? So, I mean,
I did read a couple of the reviews. It was like Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think what was being reviewed was the package of
the remix. The deluxe so you could say that, yeah, they're reviewing how well they remixed it. Right. It's all part of the thing, I guess. But, you know, yeah, on no, that subject, like is
throwing
there,
out the math.
Is there such thing as a perfect album? And, I mean, I guess if you are going to say that some albums get tens, then this maybe should be one of them, right? But I think, like, I was listening to this and I was thinking, okay, in my mind, like, of the 13 tracks, there's 9 that are just, like, off the charts incredible. But there's 4 that I think are just okay. And I'll tell you what those 4 are. I'm going to disappoint Wilson because I've got Within Wait. You, Without You, Lovely Rita, Good Morning, Good Morning, and For the Benefit of Mr. Kite. To me, those are all, like, okay songs, but they're not, like, this is, like, classic greatest album of all time level. That's just my...
Lovely Rita my and Good Morning, Good Morning.
I could agree You're with right about those maybe two. Only Good Morning, Good Morning.
Do you think Within You, Without You is, like, a
yeah,
great song?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love that song. I at okay. first, had a hard time appreciating that song because it was so different. But if you listen to the words, and I've... That's the beauty of having physical music. I've got all the words here. There are some really great lines.
That's pretty cool. Like, when did you get this, Wilson? Like, how did you just, like, this is really beautiful. This,
well,
this,
I mean,
album art.
It is
a
this is a newer pressing that I got in
couple
eighth
years ago.
Grade, something like that. It was a long time ago for me, I suppose. Not really that long.
Two years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time.
2 years ago.
Eighth grade. Was that 1980? Oh wait, no. 2015.
But, I mean, this song has some really, really interesting lyrics. Like, for example, the people who hide themselves behind a wall of illusion never glimpse the truth. Then it's far too late when they pass away. It's like, what? Like, how do you go from She Loves You to that in a matter of 5 years? That's...
Well, yeah, they definitely did that.
It's a very transcendental song, and it can... We actually listened to Within You, Without You in my English class, and they passed out sheets of paper with the lyrics on them. And everybody was surprised, because obviously everybody in my class wasn't familiar with Sgt. Pepper, so everybody was saying, well, this is a Beatles song? This sounds very different. And that's partly what I like about it, is how vastly different it is, and how it's just kind of... It's also on the album, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's this Sgt. Pepper record, which is like a bunch of rock songs and whatever, and it's a rock record. And then there's that song, and it's just, it starts side two as well, which is a very important position.
Well, in my defense, I wasn't paying attention to the lyrics, so.
Right. Well, so, I mean,
I was listening only kind of from the musical perspective.
Well, musically, it's a very interesting song. It's a very hard song to figure out. I tried to figure out the time signature. Most of the time it's just in 4/4, but there are some sections where it goes instrumental, and the time signature, I'm not even sure if they had a time signature.
Like, they drop beats
and it's just kind of, it's got fermatas in it. It's this crazy thing that I think would be just very, very difficult to write and to, like, kind of come up with and have it be on paper exactly what you're going to do and make it sound like that. So I think it's very, very interesting. The lyrics are very, very inspiring, I think, and very, very true to this day, actually, with the current political spectrum. If you really listen to them, they can kind of...
50 years later.
Kind of apply, yeah.
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 Yeah, I've always thought that song was very interesting.
Okay, so before the podcast is over, maybe I can get my pick, do you think? Can I get my pick in?
Yeah, sure. That would be a good time.
You guys can think about what I'm going to pick.
I'm going to predict it in my mind. Hold on.
I'm predicting it in my mind.
You guys write
well.
It down in a secret envelope and seal it.
I've got it, Dad. I bet we're predicting the same thing.
I think, he's going to write it down right now.
Yeah,
I'm going to do it on a memo here.
Put it in your notes. Here, I'll do it in my notes here too. I think I've
all
got
right,
it.
We need somebody to fill some
now
time.
I feel kind of bad now. I'm going to be predictable.
We picked 2. You eliminated 4. So that's getting
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick 2. There are only a few left.
We'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
You guys go ahead and mess around.
I've got it.
All right. I've got it in my thing.
All right. Good luck, game players. We're going with a little help from my friends.
Cheese. What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friend. I get high with a little help from my friend. Gonna try with a little help from my friend. What do I do when my love is away?
Does it worry you to be alone?
How do I feel by the end of the day?
Are you sad because you're on your own?
No, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try.
Definitely a great one.
Okay, let's see the sealed envelopes.
Well,
definitely.
He did his memo thing. I couldn't find mine in time, and I looked at his, and I had the same idea. So
we both were thinking a day in the life. I was almost certain.
Oh, yeah. That's obviously a great one. But
yeah,
I decided to go for the, you know, the poppy track.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to go. You really can't go wrong.
Yeah. There's. Yeah. I don't think there's any song on this record.
It's
wrong.
A really it's a great album in both like development, right, of the band, because I told you I was listening to this podcast about how the Beatles had the top five I think on the Billboard charts all at once in 1964, because they were on four different record labels, and when they hit it big, just like everything just went nuts. But all those songs are so different, right? And these songs have a level of like sophistication, and it's kind of cool to see a band that's already like huge and then they sort of develop,
right?
But right, then, totally. so not only from that perspective, but also just it's a really interesting album, right? It's diverse. The songs are not the same at all. They're some poppy ones and some super introspective and some kind of psychedelic wacky, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
it's some just kind of rocking ones.
Yeah, it's definitely it's not a consistent album. It's not an album where there's just a bunch of songs that sound the same. It's every single song. I'm not sure if there are two songs on the album that sound alike, except for obviously the title track and the reprise of the title track.
But then that's really interesting too, because they sound different, right? Like the reprise part is faster, right?
The reprise part has a faster beat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I always thought that was so cool. Because the song comes back, but it's kind of like a different version of it. It's just great.
Yeah,
my dad never liked those songs. I don't know why he doesn't like them. I think they're very cool.
You're not big on the title?
No, I like it. I like it that the reprise is not the last thing.
Right.
Day in the Life goes last. Yeah, that's cool. And it's short.
It tells you like, okay, now the record is ending and we've got one more. It's like A Day in the Life is like the encore of the record. It's like you've got this great record, and then they kind
of... Yeah, that's
kind of
cool.
They
kind
of have the outro to the record, and it's like, all right, one more song, and then they play A Day in the Life.
No, that's great.
And it's kind of a...
I don't have any...
It's a bold way to end the album, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because, like, that type of a track would normally be, like, the last song on side one or something like that.
Yeah.
But yet, to save a track that strong for the end is cool too,
right?
So everybody can listen to this album, probably not for the first time, but maybe it could be, but or maybe for the first time in, you know, 46 years, and see what you think. But it wears well, right? It ages well.
Absolutely.
So as aging rockers, we always like things that age well.
I mean, Sgt. Pepper has become like synonymous to breakthrough. Like, you could say The Who's Sellout is The Who's Sgt. Pepper. Odyssey and Oracle is The Zombies' Sgt. Pepper. The Soft Bulletin is The Flaming Lips' Sgt. Pepper.
Right.
So it's
that REM special that we did is the Will's Band of the Week, Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah, right. Pretty much most of our podcasts are all Sgt. Peppers.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Did we do it justice? Greater than $0 worth on Sergeant Pepper?
Yeah, we could talk about it forever, but we shouldn't.
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
I think so. All right. So, ready for the next anniversary? I thought this was just kind of cool because we celebrate anniversaries usually when there's either, it either ends in a zero or a five.
Right.
And the zero is preferred.
50.
Yeah. Even. 50 is like, we're getting old if we start talking about 50th anniversaries, you know?
Right.
So let's be a little more conservative and talk about a 15th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So Yankee Hotel Foxtrot by Wilco came out 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's your timing perspective on this? Do you say to yourself, wow, it's hard to believe it was that long ago? Or do you say, it really seems like it was that long ago?
It seems like it was that long ago.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. It seems like it was about 15 years ago.
It's hard to remember a Wilco before that album had come out. So
I went back and looked at our decade lists, and I'm pretty sure that I had this number one and you had it number two of the decade of mm-hmm. the 2000s.
Wow.
So we're both on record on this, liking this album.
Yeah.
Wilson, have you listened to Yankee Hotel Foxtrot?
Oh, yeah.
So I think, I'll just generally say that I think what really makes it stand out is sort of an alt country album, but with like layers of complexity and interesting stuff that just takes it a level beyond
right.
a mere alt country album.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it in this category. I think there's two main kinds of music. There's the kind of music where you could play it live and make it sound exactly like it does on the album. And then there's the kind of music where when you're making the album, you find weird sources of sounds, and you know, you, I think they did for the title track, not the title track, the first track on the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had, they took like a key to piano strings at the beginning, which is like, that's a good example of kind of the sort of thing that I put into that category of music, where it's just kind of like, you want to have this weird sound on your record and you do it. So I would definitely put that record in that category.
I think Jay Bennett's the one that did all that stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like that's we've talked about this on the podcast before, I think, but that this is like kind of the Lifetime Achievement Award of Jay Bennett, right? Because right. This was the Wilco album where it's acknowledged that he had a big influence, and then they kicked him out of the band because he didn't get along with the rest of them or whatever. Yeah. You can sort of see that. I mean, he was just a really creative person and probably had strong opinions, and that happens sometimes.
Strong drug dependency.
Well, he ended up, didn't he get addicted to painkillers? He got like hip surgery or something, and I don't know if he had drug problems before that, but then he was only in his 40s. He died in his 40s.
Yeah. He had something like he needed a hip replacement and he didn't have insurance, and he was just kind of in an overall bad place.
Right. Okay, let's not get all negative now. We're celebrating a great album, right?
This is from when he was alive.
Right. So let's play Jesus, Etc.
Jesus, don't cry. You can rely on me, honey. You can combine anything you want. I'll be around. You write about the stars. Each one is a setting sun. Tall buildings shake. Voices escape, singing sad, sad songs. Tuned to chords, strung down your cheeks. Bitter melodies, turning your orbit around. Don't cry. You can rely on me, honey. You can come by anytime you want. I'll be around. You stars. Each one is a setting sun. Tall buildings shake, voices escape, singing sad, sad songs. Tuned to chords strung down your cheeks, bitter melodies turning your orbit around. Voices whine, skyscrapers are scraping.
That's actually one of the more straightforward songs, right? There's not a whole lot of studio wizardry in there, other than those violins are kind of wild in there. But it's just, there's some kind of warmth to that whole thing that I think is great. You know, there's a story about this album that the record company didn't like it. Remember that? I think they even like dropped them, or they said, we're not putting this album out.
They rejected it. They wouldn't put it out.
And then like 6 months went by, and they finally just got, did they find another label, or they put it out themselves?
Yeah, it was going to be out on Warner's, and they rejected it. So Wilco, like, well then, if you don't want it, can we just have it? I'm like, yeah, go for it. So then they brought it to, I think it's Nonesuch Records.
Sounds right.
And then later, Warner Brothers bought Nonesuch. So Warner's really kind of paid for it twice, and then also, you know, obviously a bit of an embarrassment for having turned it down. But
yeah. Yeah. And then there's the also I love the trivia about the album cover, right? The album cover is this circular towers in Chicago. And if you've been to Chicago, you like,
you can't miss them.
Yeah. You just like, hey, that's the Wilco album cover.
Right.
And, it was very funny. Like 2 years ago, we went down to Chicago, and I got a hotel just from Hotwire. For those of you not familiar with Hotwire, it's a service where they just find a hotel for you, and you don't know what hotel you're going to get. But you can go by like the rating and the neighborhood it's in and the cost and all that, right? So it's kind of random hotel thing. So I got this hotel, like looking out the window, and that's the Wilco Towers. I call them the Wilco Towers.
Sure.
So I on my Facebook, I had this. Hey, I'm at the Wilco Towers.
Yeah, well,
right.
That was fun.
On our recent trip to Chicago, we saw the Wilco Towers, and we found the place where they must have stood to take the photo. And I took a photo, and I've got it.
It's not loading on your phone.
I've got it on my Instagram.
Damn it.
Verizon has been absolutely miserable lately. Yeah.
But you have a photo of yourself, like, at the location of the Wilco Towers photo.
No, it's like a total reshoot.
I took the photo again.
Craig do that? He's got, like, photos of himself, like, recreating an album cover. Like,
yeah, that sounds familiar.
I love that.
Yeah.
It looks actually quite similar to the original. I'm very annoyed at Verizon.
So for like an art project, you got to take a picture and then like get the color and everything as close as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Cool. I did sort of do that. I did put a filter on it. Here it comes. Yeah.
All right, while you're waiting for that,
let's
make the next pick.
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm going to go with, this is kind of one of the hits, but I do like it, War on War.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm going to say you made a better pick than me, because that's a great representation of a chunk of the album, right? Like with those great keyboard wacky sounds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great how it mixes in with like a simple kind of folky song.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a simple kind of repetitive, but
it's definitely catchy.
Yeah. I really do like the way, it repeats that it's a war on war, and it gets, drags out a little bit, and
right.
then it breaks into the other part, and it's like,
like a relief.
Or yeah. It's really
yeah,
cool.
Absolutely. All right, we're turning it over to Wilson.
Ooh.
You got millions of people on the internet waiting to hear what you're going to say.
Yes. Oh, I have,
everybody's heading to the refrigerator to get a snack or going to use the bathroom. Now that Wilson's making his pick, they know it's going to be
something a while. They can
it's comments like that really do wonders for my self-esteem.
I wasn't commenting on how long it takes. I was commenting on how likely the selection is to be pretty lame.
Well, the first time I heard Pot Kettle Black, there's a little, I'm not sure what it is. There's a little like squeaky sort of really small sound in there that's on the half beat. And it pans with each separate sound. It pans left and right, and that was kind of the hook for that song for me.
Huh.
So I've always really liked Pot Kettle Black.
All right, well, we're gonna listen for that right now.
Where's the magic wand? Empty out your pockets. Words without a song. I myself have found a real.
Yeah, that one has a bunch of little colorings in it, too. Like, there's that part in the second verse that sounds like there's a bug or something.
Yeah,
like
that's...
Like this buzzing sound.
That's the sound to which I was referring.
Oh, yeah.
I the first time I heard that, I was like, well, is that something wrong with my speaker? Like, what's going on? And as I listened to it more, I began to have a great appreciation for it. And I really... That's kind of the particular part of this song that really got me hooked on that song.
Well, there's a detail. It's like that's great.
Pretty minute detail there.
You know, we should mention that if people like this album, there is a documentary called "I Am Trying to Break Your Heart," mm-hmm. which is great. It's just a documentary about the making of this album. And someone I had that on VHS. I think. I don't even have a VHS player anymore. But I bet you can get that. There's probably some streaming service probably have it.
Yeah, right? I think so. I think it's on like Netflix.
It's worth watching. It's cool. I kind of think we should play a bonus because it just seems like when you talk about this album, you should probably play Heavy Metal Drummer, don't you think?
Sure. I want to make one comment while everybody still has Pot Kettle Black in their mind.
Yeah.
The song Camera is too similar to that.
Oh, it is a lot like it.
They're like the same song.
I never thought of that before.
Yeah, here, let's just play like the very beginning of Camera.
I need a camera to my eye, to my eye.
Well, it's got the same sort of vibe to it, but...
Yeah, and I think the phrasing of the...
Pot Kettle Black is faster.
Yeah. What am I saying?
They're kind of similar.
They're not.
They're the two most similar songs probably on the album.
They're eerily similar, yeah.
Yeah.
Most albums don't have songs that are similar as those.
Okay, before we play Heavy Metal Drummer, like, this is one thing that really interests me about this song. What genre is this song even? Like, is this even an alt-country? Or, I mean, what is it? It's just kind of a fun song, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, let's listen to it a little bit. So I just think that's a really unique song, and it's fun. And it comes up on the album, and it's gotten kind of heavy and kind of slow, and they just kind of like bump it up a little bit.
Yeah,
it's cool. So we've only done put a little dent in this album, just like we did with Sgt. Pepper's, but it's a whole album full of a lot of great stuff, right?
Is this your favorite Wilco album?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like a lot of them. But
not mine.
Really?
Which one's your favorite?
Summer Teeth. Yeah, that's a good one, too.
They put out four really great ones in a row.
Part of it was just the order that I didn't hear Summer Teeth right when it came out, and I did hear this one. So it's like part of it's just a timing thing. But
Yeah.
All right. The second favorite Wilco album, according to Barrett.
Well, maybe it's third.
I have a curious question for you.
What?
If you put Yankee Hotel Foxtrot at number two of your... albums of the 2000s. What was number one?
I know the answer. I looked it up.
I'm very, very curious.
His favorite album of the decade? It was Kid A by Radiohead.
Oh, yeah. I'll stand by that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Okay, you're gonna
I thought it was going to be something terrible. It's like something embarrassing that I liked for a week while I was putting that list together.
Arcade Fire?
Yeah, no.
Here, I have a question.
There weren't any 38 special albums released in that decade. Otherwise, that would have been right up there.
It should have an asterisk.
Right.
If the Soft Bulletin had come out 2 years after it did, would that be at your number one?
I kind of struggled with that myself because I think I put Yoshimi in like my top five, but I think Soft Bulletin is better. But it came out in 99, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say it would be number one, depending on, it's the kind of stuff is always fluid, Something could be in my top whatever, and then it just disappears, and something else comes.
Come on, Barrett, either it is or it isn't. You can't change.
Yeah, no, that's the luxury
impermissible.
Of not having any,
We make no commitments.
Yeah,
right.
No commitments.
Yep. All right, $0 worth? By the way,
easily.
I have a bonus. The Brewers won again today.
I know.
They're fighting to stay above 500.
They've had a rough spell. They've gone.
Yeah, I know.
They've lost six of the last 10, but have not lost any ground. Because everybody else.
Because the Cubs keep losing. Right.
Yeah.
I'm.
They're three back.
I'm going in 2 weeks with my friend Bruce. and you were kind enough to give us some tips because of the, what's that place called? Kelly's.
Kelly's.
We're gonna go there. Yeah. So I'm joking back and forth with Bruce about how can they hang on and stay above 500 for two more weeks? That's a lot to ask.
It's going to be tough. I haven't looked at the schedule. I mean, they're definitely not going to be in the hunt for
like a division
another 6 weeks or anything. They're going to tail off. But
it's kind of good that they're at least hanging on so far. It makes it more fun, right?
They've got some pretty good players that we know will be around in a couple of years. So
it all comes down to timely hitting, solid defense, and throwing strikes.
And also the run differential.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, run differential is a really important statistic. Yeah. What about batting average with runners in scoring position?
That's right. Timely hitting, definitely.
Yeah. How about manufacturing runs?
You want to manufacture runs if you're not hitting home runs.
Well, that's the thing. That's the alternative. You can manufacture runs, but that's kind of a lot of work. I mean, why not just hit the stupid thing out of the park, like right away? Just hit it out of the park.
Right. Well, remember Earl Weaver was the manager of the Orioles, like in the 70s?
Yeah, Earl Weaver, classic.
He was very anti-small ball. It's like you get a guy in first base, he tries to steal, gets thrown out, and then the guy at bat hits a home run. Like, what have you, you know?
You just lost a run.
You just lost a run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, thought we'd like to give that little bonus content, but we're well over an hour.
Baseball analysis, yeah.
We didn't need to tap the reserves for my reserve band. I think we did plenty this week. Absolutely, right?
Yeah. Well, one reviewer on Apple Music or the podcast thing. That's on Apple Music, right?
The podcast?
The podcast is just on the podcast app.
Yeah, it's just on like everybody's podcast app, whatever it is. And it's on iTunes, right?
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, can you clean that up?
No, I'm not going to. We're going to leave the error there because we're imperfect people.
Oh, my God.
We're proud of our imperfection.
Anyway, somebody there gave us a 1-star.
Oh, come on.
Just on Monday.
Really?
Yeah.
What did it say? Just these guys suck?
Let me read it to you. Not in those exact words, but that's what they were getting across. But said something like, my phone doesn't work in here either. I don't know why. But it's something about like, do you ever think about doing a podcast, but you didn't because you weren't sure it was going to be listenable? Well, trust your instincts. 1-star. And it stung. I really did.
Oh, that's kind of mean.
It is mean.
Come on, people.
That's very mean.
Yeah.
Even if I felt that way, I wouldn't voice that opinion.
If
it's not for you, just don't listen to it.
Free.
It's a free, exactly. It's a free product. You don't need to criticize
it. Yeah, come on, people. Be nice.
Doing this thing for free every week for 8 years, and it's not good enough for this guy. Anyway, I should probably develop a thicker skin.
He's just a sour apple. He just has something insecure about him, and he needed to get that out by criticizing you.
I think it's...
I hope.
Inexcusable when somebody in a public way criticizes somebody else's art. Obviously that's completely hypocritical.
I don't think it's inexcusable. I think it's unadvisable. And I think it's...
I do that all the time on this podcast, though.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, we got a 1-star. But all
everybody else
to
is
that,
fives.
It was all 5.
I know, so he's bringing the average way down.
What were the?
Oh, we knew we had a 3 also.
What were his exact words? I'm curious.
Just what Barrett said. Did you ever think of doing a podcast but wonder whether it would be worth listening to? Trust your instinct. And then he gave us 1-star.
What's his name? Roadkill?
Roadkill 102438. This guy's clearly not to be trusted. All right, so anyway, if you guys want to post nice reviews to counterbalance that, feel free.
Yeah, I need to like push that down on the page or
push
something.
Push it way down so nobody notices it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Wilson, making yet another successful venture into sport. Sports bedroom studios, I was going to say.
Whoa.
We kind of are that too, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
But it's really just 4th bedroom studios. But hey, we're good.
Well, it's my great pleasure to have attended. Once again.
Good. Barrett, thank you, too. I don't take you for granted, even though you're here a lot more often.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. It's always fun. It's all obviously fun to have Wilson here for me and for the listeners, too, I'm sure. And,
All right.
How was your, I think his Well, the sponsorship this week was split between a beer company and San Pellegrino.
Right.
So how did you like that?
The San Pellegrino was very good, although I must admit that after having consumed the entire thing, I now desperately have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, right, well, that's a good time good, to it's wrap good for it up hydration then. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the beer for the week was New Belgium Brewery. Had a couple mm-hmm. of varieties from there, from Fort Collins, Colorado. I visited the brewery only about 2 months ago. A little trivia
that's
item.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Good night, cool. everybody. We'll All talk right. to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @WillsBand. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.